It's now time for your favorite guilty pleasure.
The E2 Books Show.
Check your innocence at the door and welcome two of the men your mama warned you about.
Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
Scott.
Yes, Craig.
Finally had on the second part of the dynamic duo, Tess Thompson and Karen McQuestion. What do you think of that?
I think that now I don't know which one of them is more insane than the other. You know? I thought maybe when we did this, it would clear it up, but they're crazy.
But that's why we had them on. It was a mystery that we've talked about for many months now.
And we may have to go for a second round with both of them. Hold on. Honest.
Oh, I'm getting a alert from the New York Times. They've already done an in-depth search on this and investigation. They couldn't figure it out either.
No.
As far as the editorial board there is concerned, they're equally insane.
Yeah. Well, so I guess we will officially move forward based on that premise.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and call that solved. But she gave a great interview.
Yeah. Aside from that, even though she's clearly out of her mind, she did give a great interview.
In all seriousness, we were serious the whole time. No, a great author and USA Today best-selling, award-winning. Yeah. Can't really argue with that.
I can't even pretend to relate to it at this point, but that's exactly. Okay. I can envy it. That I'm good at.
It's fun. It's great when you meet writers who are great writers.
Right.
It's even better when you meet great writers who are great people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those instances where, you know, you got both of those. Now, when she met us, I doubt very much she had that impression.
No, I'm sure she's like
these two are neither great writers nor are they great people. Right. What the hell am I doing here?
And she's like, fortunately, Craig is a great editor, so we're going to maintain this relationship.
That's the secret. Just make yourself invaluable to people.
Right. In some way or another.
How you survive.
Turns out I'm a great garbage taker outer, so I've had this gig for 34 years now.
Well, Tess asked me if there was anything she would need for today's interview, and I replied, booze.
Yeah.
And she says, I always have plenty of that, she said. So I had no worries about how today was going to go. I knew it was going to go well. All right.
All right. Start earning your money, Hart. Read the introduction.
I'm getting paid for this?
No, but start doing what you will one day do to earn money. How's that sound?
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
Welcome back to the E2 Book Show. My name is Craig Hart. I'm here with my co-host, S.J. Varengo. Hello.
He's going to stop bonking himself with his boom for a few minutes here. Hi, everyone.
It's entertaining. Don't stop. Well, we have
it at least once a show without realizing. I get all excited and I'm like, bam!
If we had contracts, that would be in your contract for sure. We have a special guest today, Tess Thompson. Tess, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate having you here. I told Scott earlier that I don't know why people continue to come on the show, but we're glad that we continue to fool them long enough.
I think the key is that in between episodes, no one watches them, so they don't know how bad it is. So for like another probably 4 or 5 episodes, we'll be gold until someone catches on.
Until they figure out.
Yeah, then it's time to move on to a new enterprise. I think Good Humor Sales or something like that.
Maybe. Well, Tess Thompson is a USA Today bestselling and award-winning author of contemporary and historical romantic women's fiction. Mouthful. Tess loves lazy afternoons watching football, hanging out on the back patio with best husband ever, reading in bed with best husband ever. I added that part. Binge watching television series, red wine, strong coffee, and walks on crisp autumn days. She laughs a little too loudly. No, you don't. Never knows what to make for dinner. None of us do. And always complains about the rain, even though she chose to live in Seattle. She's grateful to spend most days in her office matchmaking her characters while her favorite cat, Mittens, sleeps on the desk, starting out first question, how do the other cats feel about Mittens being the favorite, and does this cause drama in the household?
Well, it's actually a very sad story because when we merged households, so my husband and I are a blended family. He had two sons. I have two daughters. And we had five cats between us. So two cats were mine and three cats were his. Well, Shadow, who is the wonder cat of all time, I mean, I saw her once catch a bird in midair. You know, it's not a sight I want to ever see again.
But I'm guessing you're not talking. She caught it like this, right?
No, it was all teeth out and claws. Anyway, she does not care for the black kitties. So we have now a divided household where the black kitties live upstairs and the other kitties live downstairs. So whether or not they know Mittens is my favorite, I'm not sure, but that could be part of the angst. But I really don't know.
Yeah.
Well, odds are they're not going to watch the show either. So secret with us. Right.
You don't know. You really don't.
I have a dog, Miles, who Craig knows well and is very fond of. We have a mutual dog admiration thing going on. But my dog likes to listen. When I'm working with a narrator on one of my books, I will often put her through the speakers so that Miles can hear, because he just loves to listen to this person's voice. And she'll actually like talk to him now. If I tell her, you know, Miles is listening, she'll be like, oh, he's such a good boy. And he's over there soaking it all up. He's like, yes, I am.
Well, he's probably thinking, well, finally, he figured out that I can't read because I'm right. A dog. Right.
And I do want to hear his books, but
yeah,
awkward.
I want to be supportive, but I just can't figure out how.
I know, I'll pee on the rug. Right. That used to work.
Used to get me attention. Now he does it. Now Scott does it too. So it's not special anymore.
Well, it looked like a good idea at the time. What can
I say? Well, in all seriousness, Tessie.
Which there won't be much of.
It's not going to be anymore. No. But your tagline as an author is hometowns and heartstrings. And I guess, you know, the meaning of that may seem obvious, but could you tell us a little bit about what that involves in terms of your books? I guess, in other words, what can readers expect when they pick up a Tess Thompson book?
Yeah, so they're almost always set in a small town and, you know, the kind of cozy, feel good with the quirky characters. So kind of the hometown feel, cozy. Mm-hmm. And then the heartstrings is based on the fact that my readers always tell me that I make them cry. So I was like, how is a nice way of saying that? Oh, heartstrings. I tug at the heartstrings.
My readers often say that too, but I don't think they mean it in the same way. Right.
Well, we authors are such evil people. Like, if we can make people cry, lose sleep, whatever, some sort of expression of emotion, then that makes our day.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, nothing's better than, oh, I was late for work this morning because I was up until 3 a.m. And you're like, yes.
And I got fired. And you're like, how are they going to afford the rest of my books?
You know? Yeah, this is bad. This is only the third in the series.
Keep it together until you finish the series. But Scott, I guess, you know, Scott, you and I should probably come up with a tagline of some sort. Do you have any ideas? Maybe Rummies and Roustabouts?
I like the H vibe. So how about Hot Babes and Hemorrhoids? How's that sound?
That is a winner. I mean, I just want to buy the books right now. To
Which one of us is the hot babe and which is the hemorrhoid, Scott?
Not talking.
It's wise.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
I've got all these serious questions and they just now make no sense at all. But now, Tess, you graduated from the University of Southern California Drama School with your eye on becoming an actress. I guess my question is, what refocused you on writing?
Well, I think it's going to be DNA is what we're going to call it. I was too short, fat, and homely for the camera. So I was like, what can I do to tell a story where nobody has to look at me? And I came up with this.
Wow, we have the exact same reason for writing.
I'm going to get up and just walk away.
Well, I was gonna comment earlier that we have the same stupid thing about weather, too, because if you look it up, I think you can actually look it up. Seattle and Syracuse are like neck and neck for rain every year. And we... get a shit ton more snow than you do. But there's no reason for me to be here at all, except for the fact that I have a granddaughter coming. But
that's a big reason. Yeah. Yeah.
I missed most of that, Scott, because you froze up and then suddenly you went 90 miles an hour with the rest of what you were saying.
Well, I was just saying bad things about you.
All right. Well, we're going to move on then. But while preparing for this interview, Tess, I tried to get your partner in crime, Karen McQuestion, I emailed her and asked her if tried to get her to dish on any embarrassing and awkward things I could ask. She clammed up, though. She clammed like a fall guy taking a rap for a mob boss.
Yep.
Wow.
So it was impressive. You must have something on her, or if it's in the contract somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, I think she has my back for sure, because about an hour ago, I sent her a frantic text. I was like, wait a minute. This recording is I said, I know there's video, but is it recorded? And will they be sharing that video with the world? And I said, because I need to know if I should shower. And she wrote back right away in all capitals, it's live.
All right. This is just getting weird now, Craig. Did I not talk about that very thing to you earlier? I'm even showering for this one.
I was going to say you claimed you were going to shower, but I knew that was a lie.
Well, see, the ball cap, that's how you can tell. If I have a ball cap on an interview, it means...
Okay, that's the same with me, Scott. So we are apparently like twins that were sent at birth.
There's things about my childhood that I don't remember too clearly, so anything's possible at this point.
My adulthood,
same story. I don't remember much of that either. That's why it's good to have Craig around to document all my foolishness. Because
I don't remember it all either. I just make up things to make you feel good. So sort of like
as long as the stories you tell me about myself don't involve any felonious actions, then go right ahead.
Wow.
Well, it's like
that's a low bar.
You need somebody around in your life to make you feel good. It's like the other day, my wife and I were standing in the bathroom getting ready for the day, and I just looked in the mirror and I said, "Kim," I said, "I look in the mirror and all I see is a fat old broken down man, and I need you to give me a compliment." So she thought for a minute. She's like, "Okay, your eyesight's damn near perfect." I said, "You dirty dog."
Oh my God.
No, I made that up. Solo from Norm MacDonald. So,
That's a good one.
But the other thing that I asked Karen during the interview, I didn't ask her. She claimed this all on her own, that every time she says your name, she's required to say USA Today best-selling author, Tess Thompson.
Former almost famous actress.
Former lifelong friend, Karen McQuestion.
Now I'm starting to cash in on all you guys with just interviewer of, New York Times bestseller.
Whatever the path is, Scott.
Just interviewer of for all those great things.
It doesn't matter. People have become famous for much less.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, we've interviewed a Guinness Book record holder, so we can add that to our resume. Interviewer of someone really cool,
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, that's legit.
Well, Tess, you're clearly doing well in your author career, but what does success actually look like to you?
That's an actual serious question, because I think about this
a lot.
I know,
weird, right?
I have this thing where I'm kind of competitive and sort of a jealous person. I hate to say it. So I'm often like going, so-and-so is doing so much better than me. And it really bothers me. And so I've been working on myself the last couple years of, okay, this is your race. You're just doing it. This is about you and nobody else. Right. And so I've been kind of trying to figure that out, but I guess I would say success is the fact that I get to do this for a living. I make actual money making up stories that people enjoy. It's such a huge honor, and I'm so humbled every day when I come in here at my desk. And I do complain about the rain, but I never complain about writing.
Nice.
I'm like, oh God, I get to do this again? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So I would say, there's always, of course, milestones that you hope you'll reach. That I haven't yet, but so far, it's been kind of amazing that I can do this and that people keep buying books that I write. It's just, I honestly can't believe it. Sometimes I look sometimes at my, you know, you go in and look at your sales for the day and you think, gosh, like that many people actually like spent $5 to read something right. that I wrote just from my heart, you know? So it's pretty great.
Well, not only did they do that, but they chose your book out of a lot of other choices.
Out of millions, you know, just, literally
there's
millions.
So many options. And I know that, you know, you have a fan base because I see them post on Facebook. I read the reviews and, you know, people are eagerly awaiting whatever you write next. And that's an incredible place to find yourself. And Scott, I'm having all these epiphanies now talking with Tess, and I just figured out why you and I lead such peaceful existences. It's because nobody's doing worse than we are.
That's right. and I am almost positive that I can tell you, you know, out of 1,492,655 books, they picked yours, because I have several books ranked right around there. So I know there's at least that many.
Listen, we all have books ranked around there. So I don't think you should take that as a bad sign.
I don't. I use it as a measuring stick now. So I use it practically. And
well, since everybody's watching the insanity of this podcast, maybe we should give them an option. Now, you and Karen have your own podcast. And tell us a little bit about that and where people can find it.
And I want to piggyback on that question, because this is the part where I'm hoping you will embarrass Craig so badly that he pees himself. Please
I've already peed myself. He just can't see.
Oh, well, then
I got you to say, we don't know what's going on down there.
But no pants, you know, either.
Please tell us about your excellent editor while you tell us about your content.
Okay, no, this is for real. Every single day, Karen and I, either talking or through text, go, oh my God, Craig is a genius. We do not know how he is making a podcast, by which our tagline should be two little old ladies do a podcast. He makes it sound so good. We cannot believe it, honestly. And as far as the podcast goes, it was just kind of my harebrained idea that it might be fun to do a show about, really focused on the craft of writing, sort of for aspiring authors or, you mm-hmm. know, people, you know, coming up or whatever. And I thought of Karen because she's like one of my favorite people. She makes me laugh so hard and I love her books. Like I'm a huge, huge fan. But she's kind of an introvert, as you may have picked up, Craig. And I didn't think she'd say yes. I sent her a note and she wrote back right away. Sure. That's all she said. Sure. I was like, wait, what? I couldn't believe it. And she was definitely my first choice, but I had some other people in mind. So I was like, there's no way Karen's going to do this with me, because it's so out of her, you know, I mean, yeah, former, you know, drama student, no brainer. Like, of course, I want people to listen to me and look at me and everything. That's awesome. But Karen, you know, has a little more dignity. But anyway, it's been super fun. We're just getting started. You know, we don't have a ton of fans yet, but we're hoping it someday we will. And yeah, it's just been fun. And Craig's awesome.
No, you.
Well, I am a fan, and I was rapidly nearing a ton before I went on my diet. So you were almost there, and then I went and screwed it up and started doing Noom. Sorry.
They reached critical mass with one fan. So aside from the editing, I think you guys just do a great job. I think you compliment each other. You both have – you bring a unique sense of humor.
I really admire you two. Like, I'm just having so much fun, and you guys are so funny. And Karen told me, because she had a blast when she was on here with you guys, and we were talking about, like, how could we be funny like those guys? But so far it's not really working.
You don't want to be.
Yeah.
You
don't. It takes a lot of carbon monoxide poisoning.
No, I joke every time when I say I'm surprised people keep coming on this show, but honestly, you meet somebody who shares your sense of humor, or at least puts up with your sense of humor, and you need to hold on to that person.
For sure.
Yeah. I agree.
With the writing community, what is one thing that you love most about it, and possibly one thing that you might change about it?
Well, you know, I'm indie published, and mm-hmm. I was with a small press in the beginning, and then I went indie, and I'm absolutely astounded by the generosity of the community. The way that other authors will share their data, their advertising you know, advice, just anything that you could ask and need to know, somebody will have an answer out there, and right. and they're always willing to share it. And I think it's kind of a unique thing that we do, that we sell, because it's not really like we're totally in competition with one another. Right. Because there's always, you read a fan reads a book, well, then they want another book. Oh, and here's somebody that's kind of in the same subgenre or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you should read my friend's book because you'll like it. So I think that part of it is makes it kind of special. And it's just such a hard industry in general that, you know, helping each other is absolutely imperative.
Right.
You know, it's like, or you lose your mind. Yeah,
especially if you're doing it as an indie. I mean, that's whenever I talk to anybody about what I do, that's the thing I stress. It's like writing, I'm going to do no matter what. I can't not write, you know, but the business side of it, you know, when I first started out, obviously I knew nothing. Craig was kind enough to take me under his wing, you know, and say, yeah, you should probably use a readable font, you know, things like that. Maybe check your spelling over. But, you know, there's so much to do, so much to know. And there's so many people that are really, really good at that part of it that are totally willing to give of themselves to you about that. And Craig and I have seen benefits, you know, from some of the courses we've taken and stuff like that. As far as marketing go, it ends up in retrospect being, oh, duh, of course, it's so obvious. But it's nothing right. you would think of unless someone who had already been there said, hey, pal, let me take you under my wing because you're clearly stupid, you know.
It's so true. And like you said, there's always something more to learn, which is just, you know, it's endless. But also, once you know it, you're like, oh, when did I not know this? You know, it's just like, once you kind of get into it, you realize, oh, okay, I understand how this works. Because, like I said, I was with a small press for the first 8 books. Mm-hmm. And when they went under, I was clueless. I was astounded by how many things they had actually done for me and that I didn't know about. And that then it was like, okay, I got to jump right in and figure this out. But there's so many resources, there's wonderful podcasts out there. There's just a ton of information if you know where to look for it.
I think everybody has something to give to the community, and everybody has something that they can learn from the community. And I have learned that the most generous people are often the most successful in the indie industry, which is kind of opposite what you might think, and what is opposite in perhaps some other industries. But I think those are the people who have learned the ropes. They know how hard it is. They help know, because we all wear so many different hats. It's incredibly overwhelming. And once you find, on the flip side of that, I will say, if you find somebody who isn't willing to give, and there may be reasons for that, but if it's somebody who finds themselves in competition with you, that person is not somebody you want in your circle, to be honest, because there's something else going on there, because just there's no reason for it beyond what something they might have going on in their own heads, because it's certainly not a matter of self-preservation, because a rising tide in the indie world raises all boats. What is one common myth about your job or field of experience?
Okay, this is going to be very controversial.
Oh, good.
Am I going to get in trouble? But I don't believe in writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's, you know, if you're feeling blocked, it's because you're either writing the wrong story or it's not the right time to write it, and you should try something different. Mm-hmm. And what I always think of is like, what's the book that you want to read?
Mm-hmm.
And go write that one, because I think that frees you up. Because for me, you know, I wanted to write forever. And, you know, I had this love of, you know, great literature and all this kind of stuff. And I would always think, oh, well, there's no way I could ever write that well, so I shouldn't do it. Well, then, you know, you think, well, actually, the kind of book I really like are these, you know, fun little, you know, women's fiction with a happy ending. Like, well, why don't I try writing one of those? And once I once I freed myself up for that, that's when it all just started flowing out. So I guess that would be kind of what I guess that would be my answer to that.
I think that might be one of the great polarizing questions of our industry, you know, the writer's block question, because and almost everybody that we've talked to about that say a variation of what you said. I mean, you hear people complaining about writer's block all the time, but when you're talking to a writer who's writing, they usually will tell you, no, I don't think that's a thing. And my thing, I've said this before, I always go back to Hemingway's instruction of starting with one true sentence. Just write one true sentence and then see what happens. And anytime I've ever been hung up, if I can remember that, then at least I got one sentence, right? But yeah. No, it literally does. You got a true sentence that you can now relate the next thing to that truth, you know? Mm-hmm. That's my method anyway.
Well, and it makes
he's not around to claim it anymore. So exactly. It's mine the whole time.
One sentence usually leads to another, right? And then two sentences leads to a paragraph. Paragraph leads to a page. But you also touched on something I think is very important, and that is giving yourself the freedom. I hope I'm not misinterpreting what you said. Give yourself the freedom to write what means something to you. I think a lot of us get so caught up in that, you know, when I was trying to learn how to write, I read stacks upon stacks of books on how to write, and you all get conflicting advice, and then you're sitting there, well, what do I do? Things work differently for different writers, and I think we need to give ourselves permission to write what is meaningful to us, but also to write it in the way that is meaningful to us as well, because if it's meaningful to us, it's much more likely to be meaningful to those who are reading it. It's tough to put on an act as a writer if you're writing something that you really don't care about.
Right.
It's tough to make a reader believe that you do.
Yeah. Somewhere in the world, someone's going, bullshit.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Or it's not engaging because it wasn't engaging to the writer, you know? Right. So yeah, exactly. I agree 100%.
I mean, if the guy writing it doesn't care enough, why should I? Right.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And why should we expect people to pay money for it?
Right.
You know.
Well, and it's interesting. Have you guys ever heard of Jennifer Barnes? She's a PhD who studies the psychology of fandom.
Mm-hmm.
No, she spoke at a conference. Oh, you guys would be fascinated by her. And she's supposedly going to have a book out at some point about her theories. But anyway, she literally studies this about what makes things fandom-ish, you know, right. Harry Potter or whatever, you know, anything that just went crazy like that. And one thing she said that really struck home for me and also freed me up a lot is she's like, when you're sitting down to write, especially if you have a volume of books already out there and you think I have to come up with something I haven't done before or something somebody else hasn't done before. She's like, it's actually kind of ridiculous because if you like it, a lot of other people probably will like it too. Right. And you know, she had these examples like, you know, just like funny little tropes like, the brother who inherits his younger sisters, you know, I'm like, oh my God, I love that trope. I would read it a billion times. Like, I don't care if it's in, you know, 10 books or whatever. So, I thought that was a really great way to think about it was just like, if it's whatever you like and whatever is something that you'd never get sick of, it's most likely other people too. Not everybody, but that's enough that they will buy your book, you know? So I was like, oh yeah. Okay.
Right. And I have no patience for really anyone who demeans what another person is writing, because that's stupid or that's not elevated enough or that's not real literature. And like, all right. I've read, I don't know how many people on Twitter when I was actually paying attention to Twitter and who were going on about, you know, how they write real literature. And then I would go and find out on Amazon that nobody's actually reading them. And the people are reading the stuff they're making fun of. So that may have been the crux of their angst, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to defend themselves.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And as artists, we're also insecure. But yeah, I mean, I always just go back to the, you know, what's the story? Tell the story. And I think that's in the Stephen King on writing. Yeah. Just is like, you know, always go back to what's the story. And then the other thing I always think of, and I can't remember who said this, but it was something about, yeah, fiction is like real life, only with the boring parts left out. And so whenever I'm writing and I'm like describing, like, you know, what they're having for breakfast, I'm like,
right,
nobody cares about this.
Right. Or I was listening to a book being narrated not too long ago, and it's like every scene the author tells us what the character has changed into. Like, she came in wearing a white shirt with this and that and that, and it's like 2 pages later I'm getting a whole nother description of her outfit. It's like, A, I don't care, and B, I've been with too many girls like this. I'm not finishing this book.
Yeah, although, I mean, I guess that the only way I could see that working is when you think about the whole point of view of a character. So is he or she a fashion designer? You know, do they always notice clothes? Mm-hmm. You know, my younger daughter and I always joke that we always remember what we ate wherever we went. Mm-hmm. Whereas other people remember what they wore, you know.
Remember that time we went to steak medium well? Oh, yeah, that was a good trip.
What was the name of the restaurant? Steak medium well?
That is a catchy name. Wow. I bet that's going to get stolen.
You're going to see the people sitting around in a boardroom. Okay, what should we call it? Well, what are we going to serve?
Putting an R in a circle right next to that one. Registered trademark as of this moment. Back off.
What is, oh, here is a question that fits right in. If you had to eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, I'm going to have to go with mashed potatoes and chicken piccata, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or good maybe choice. I don't know. Then there's sushi. That's always a good one. I don't know. It's too hard. I love food. I know the reason why I'm not an actress.
I finished up narrating The Patron, and at the Christmas dinner, you described the food, green bean casserole, etc. I was so hungry in the booth. I got out, and it wasn't long before the show, so I didn't really have time to get it. I was like, how dare? I'm still hungry. And here the question has come up, and maybe why I included the question, to be honest.
But don't feel guilty, because he does the same thing to himself. We'll be like co-writing something, and he's like, all right, it's back to you. I added a breakfast scene, and now I'm starving.
I know. No, listen, I was thinking the other day, I'm not making this up. This is completely the truth. I'm always trying to lose weight, you know, all my life. Like, oh, just another 5 pounds or 10 pounds or whatever it is. So I'm always on some stupid diet. And when I'm writing, I'm like, oh, I'm going to let these people eat. Like, they get to eat. They're just naturally skinny. And that's what I get. Wait, I'm talking about food again. I gotta get off the food thing.
Well, I can't take it any longer. I'm too hungry. We're going to have to go. But before we go, Tess, I do want to know, where can listeners find you online?
All right. So I'm TessWrites.com. That's my website. And on social media, I'm everywhere. My dad is like horrified because he Googled me one time. It's like all these things came up. So just put my name in there, author, and you'll find me.
Sounds good. Tess, thank you so much for coming on the E2 Book Show. I really appreciate it. Scott, I suppose, thanks for being here as well. And whatever my name is.
Definitely.
Oh, look, thank you. Is that Mittens?
Yes. She's making her appearance. This is where I have the computers, where she usually has her bed. So she's confused.
She's like, all right, nap time. Nap time.
All right. So now, wrap it up, people.
Well, that's not enough time.
Do I have to void the check and make it out for two people now because they got me in the appearance?
No, who's getting paid?
I'm her manager. Don't you worry about it.
Sounds good. All right, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. So
thanks, awesome. Everyone.
Right. Bye.
The E2 Books Show.
E2 Books Show
by Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.